Hello, it is December 4th, 2015. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 539 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. I hope everyone enjoyed the Jeb Lund Thanksgiving podcast. That was really fun. We're going to do that again next year and every year after that until there are no more Thanksgivings, because we've all died because the Earth has crashed into the sun, extinguishing all life on this planet. Until then, we will have those happy fun times every year. But we were due for a podcast with Allison Futter. Lots going on in the world of baseball. It's the hot stove. Whew. Check out, that stove is hot. And we're going to talk about with Allison next week, by the way. Next week or the week after, we'll probably have one more before then. We're going to do my yearly chat with Tommy Craggs, who has had an interesting year. He and I are going to chat before the year is out. I think we'll have one more before then. But right now, me and Allison, I've missed her. I hope she's missed me. It's time to talk some baseball. All right. Well, hello, Allison. I've missed you. Have you missed me?
I've missed you terribly. I kept thinking, when are we going to do another one of these? I guess now that we have the winter meetings coming up, there's baseball to talk about. There's always baseball to talk about, though. So where have you been? Will? You've been ignoring me.
I haven't been ignoring you. Are you going to the winter meetings?
I am.
Yeah, I'm not going. I've never been. I have a hard time. I've talked about this before. One of my hardest things to do as someone that covers sports professionally is going to cover sports things where there are no sports.
Right.
I always have a hard time with it. This does not come as a surprise to you. I'm not great at the scoops. I'm not so good at the scoops. So I don't know if we get, but is it fun? Are there some that are more fun than others? What's your general take on being there every year?
No, it's not fun. It's not fun. For our beat writer, it's actually excruciating. Even though it's great to see everyone and there's a lot of, time to sort of catch up with people, which is nice. But it is standing around waiting for nothing to happen. For 25 out of 30 teams, it's usually a very, kind of boring winter meetings. And then you just never know when news is going to break. So you stand around the lobby and you're trying to figure out what's going on and you're talking to people. And then at the end of the day, you have a meeting with the general manager of the team you cover, and he says, we didn't do anything today. And then you write 4 stories off of that.
Well, that sounds awesome. That sounds like a blast.
It was in San Diego last year, and that was a blast.
You're giving such a great roadmap for young journalists looking to break into the business. This could be you.
I mean, it's just 3 days. Well, then there's a job fair that goes on, and that's a whole different animal. And then that's like, so there's job seekers everywhere. And having been one of those myself in 1996, I feel, my heart goes out to these people. They don't annoy me. They annoy some other people, but I just want to throw my arms around all of them and give them all jobs. And of course, we can't do that. There was one year that the meetings were in Vegas, and I recently said, why haven't they been in Vegas again? And I guess the answer was because nobody got anything done. And so they said, no more Vegas winter meetings. So the good thing that comes out of the winter meetings are in the industry, like the PR directors all have meetings, like the athletic trainers, they all get together and have meetings. So there's actually a lot of things that get accomplished and a lot of communication. So it's not just, front offices making deals. It is an industry-wide convention, which is actually, that is a very cool thing. It's just excruciating when it comes to
when you're a reporter.
Hurry up and waiting.
Yeah, it sounds like not fun for a reporter, unless you're like Ken Rosenthal, you're John Heyman, whether you're constantly getting those whispers all the time. They're always doing
whispering. Yeah, because that's what they do in their home, right? So now they just get to be standing in the middle of a lobby, and I guess they still just get the text because you can't have agents just blatantly running up and outing themselves as the people that are giving them the scoop. So
I'm telling you, one of these years, one of those great scoop guys is just not going to come, and he's still going to get everything.
Right?
Because they're all just texting. They're all just texting, and they're all
exactly.
But for what's worth, Ken Rosenthal is an accomplished whisperer.
Oh, he's, I mean, it's, I've watched, I've seen him in action, and
he whispers like the wind.
It's fascinating, though, because people do come up and talk to him. I mean,
he's also like a prince of a guy.
He's such a good
guy. Yeah, that makes a big difference. Because, there's slimy people around all over the place, he's just an awesome guy.
Yes.
And so it's almost surprising he gets scooped, because I figure you'd have to be meaner.
He's like that kind of guy. You see him and you just want to kind of pour your life story out to him, I guess, and that's what people do.
I feel like that's the sign. That's the difference between baseball and football. In baseball, you have Ken Rosenthal. In football, you have Jay Glazer. Okay, I think that is the fundamental difference of between the two sports is the countenance and appearance of the two best scoop mongers.
Ken Rosenthal, he wears bow ties that raise money for charity.
Exactly. He's an awesome guy. We should talk about the deal that's been done. The big one, the David Price deal, is the massive deal. I wrote yesterday because, as I joked in the piece, whatever news that happens in the world, my first thought is, wait, how does this affect the Cardinals? And that could be baseball related or presidential campaign related or regardless. But certainly, the news came out that the Cardinals were second in that bidding, and the Cubs, I think, were up there as well. And generally speaking, Price had talked about how St. Louis and Chicago were places that he kind of wanted to go. They were closer to Nashville, where he was from, though neither is really that close to Nashville. They're closer than Boston, I guess. But, yeah. People have talked about how maybe his personality, you know how Boston people are, fans and media. If you don't have a certain kind of personality, it's real difficult for you, as Hanley Ramirez and Pablo Sandoval are seeing now. But as always, it always comes down to the place that offered the most money. That's where he went. And, man, they really offered a lot of money.
Yeah, they did. And I was kind of surprised that it happened so quickly. I don't know. I feel like this stuff happens usually after the winter meetings. But maybe I'm just thinking that incorrectly. The Red Sox, they're just so interesting because even though they had like this awful season, they're not an awful team. And it's sort of like to just regroup a little. David Price is perfect for them. I can't tell you how much my heart hurt when I found out that the Cardinals were in the race and then ended up just barely not getting him. That made me so sad, Will.
It's true. It's you hate to see a likable guy who would have enjoyed the place where he played and everyone would have loved him, as opposed to Fenway, where they're going to start booing him if he gets hit two games in a row.
Yeah, I need to say that the whole, like, well, they're closer to where he's from. I mean, that's so, like, overblown. Unless you're talking about, like, the Dominican Republic in relation to New York or in relation to Seattle. That's something drastic.
Right. And St. Louis and Nashville are not similar places.
I mean, it's not like, well, I could be home for dinner, a couple times a week. I mean, that's silly. Yeah. And these guys are, professional baseball players who have been all over the place and can do whatever they want in the off season. And so, yeah, I think that's just that's a little silly. But good for him. I was not surprised to see that the Red Sox were going to be big players in that. But to have, pulled the trigger so quickly, and it's exactly what they needed. So I fully expect them, of course, to be right in the thick of things next year.
It is funny because there is a fundamental – when Dombrowski went there and it kind of cleared out a little bit and became his franchise, they could not have possibly made a bigger U-turn. The whole thing with Boston the last few years has been we protect all of our assets. We are building a program, a foundation that's going to help us throughout years. And he gets there and immediately trades two of their best prospects for a closer, and then pays the highest, really the highest amount anyone's ever paid for a pitcher in short order. And it's funny, like Dombrowski, who seems like a very smart guy, but it really seems like his ultimate philosophy comes down to, I'm just going to get the really good players no matter what it costs. That's a good deal, I guess.
He's always been less hesitant to let go of minor leaguers. I mean, I think that he and Billy Bean are probably, right at the top of the list as far as just not really getting nervous at all when it comes to just trying to improve the team right then using those guys. Some other teams are, they kind of tend to keep those prospects close to the vest. And then maybe it's because Dave just doesn't have a lot of history with those minor leaguers, which is always helpful. So you see what happens. I mean, I don't know. I'm not well schooled on what the Red Sox farm system is from top to bottom, but they're also a franchise that doesn't have to solely rely just on that. And they do have money to spend. And they can spend it. So I guess they just went for it. So good for them.
Yeah, it's strange too. You're right about it being early, because certainly Price, one of the top, I think he's clearly one of the top three guys. You can argue whether he's above Greinke or he's below Greinke, or if he's above Hayward, he's below Hayward. But clearly those are the three guys, Hayward, Greinke, and Price. And I think it was surprising to see him go so early, particularly because if you look at, like, for example, I'm looking at ESPN's top 2015 free agents, none of the top 16 guys have signed other than Price. And and number 17 was Wieters, who actually because I think these are Keith Law's rankings, and I think number 17 was Matt Wieters, who actually accepted the qualifying offer. So he never even actually went on. Of the top 20 guys, the only two that have signed are Price and Zimmerman, both pitchers. But I think, which makes me think Greinke is coming soon. It looks it looks like he's going to be picking between the Dodgers and the Giants.
Yeah.
It's strange. I don't know how that got whittled down so quickly. It feels like Price, that would have opened teams back into the Greinke game rather than that. What do you think? Do you? I mean, he may end up getting, if not as many years as Price, as much money or not more. Are you okay with that? Would you pay that much for Greinke? Or forget the amount of time you're doing it just for a second. Would you pay him as much a year as they paid Price?
It would be hard because isn't Greinke 32?
He's 32. He's 32.
Yeah.
But
well,
two years older than Price.
Yeah, I think that you can't really push aside the amount of years. And I think that Greinke has made it clear that he would actually take fewer years for more annual money. Yeah. And he might even want to go that direction. No, I think that's a huge issue when it comes to these guys. I mean, these contracts don't work out. It doesn't really matter. They just don't work out.
They just don't. It's really a wild thing. I wrote about this earlier this year and about how at the end of these contracts are always terrible. Always.
Yeah, always.
Always. Like Matt Holliday right now is probably the only one that's not horrible. And he's in the last year. But I'm saying even for hitters.
Yeah.
Even hitters usually turn out poorly. Pitchers always turn out poorly. But even hitters usually turn out poorly. But we still sign them. And it's funny because in an age, the Baseball Prospectus podcast was talking about this, the idea that like in an age where starting pitchers are pitching fewer innings than ever before.
Right.
And there are more, we've basically all decided that pitchers are fungible and we're just going to have them throw as hard as they can until they throw their arms off and then we're going to discard them. To see David Price get this contract and Greinke, I think, going to get another huge contract, I can't figure it out because like on one hand, is this just the Red Sox being crazy because they need it? They had a bad, they made a couple bad decisions on pitchers and they need to overdo it? Or do you think who would you rather have, Zach Greinke or Justin Upton for the next 5 years?
Oh gosh, I think I'd rather have Zach Greinke because I think you get 3 years out of him. You're just not going to 5 years out of him.
Yeah, but the last 2 years count. This is what people always say is because they're always like, oh, you have to take the bad years at the end. But those bad years are terrible.
Years are terrible. But if the money isn't hamstringing the teams as they used to, and it's really not. I mean, we have to look at like they're spending the money because they have the money, and the amount of money that's coming into these teams is really unfathomable. It's hard to like actually even like put a concrete number on it. And so when they look down the road, I mean, part of being in the business of baseball is you just have to sign bad contracts. I mean, you have to make bad deals. And if they get a World Series out of it in his first like 3 years, then I think that they deem that as a success, you know, even if whatever they have to eat at the end. So I don't know. I mean, I just think that they say, you know, in 5 more years, baseball is going to be worth this amount and we're going to be worth this amount. And if we have to, you know, $60 million really actually won't seem like that much, which sounds like completely ridiculous. But if it gets them a World Series championship, then I think that they'll be just fine with that.
And see, and I find this really fascinating, too, because this is another thing that everyone's been talking about is all this money that's coming to baseball. And you know, it supposedly helps the middle tier teams, you know, teams that maybe don't have the payroll, have the income that the Yankees do or the Red Sox do or the Dodgers do. And for example, you're never going to believe this. I'm going to choose the Cardinals in this situation in that they just signed a cable deal to where they should be getting like $30 or $40 million a year more in revenue.
Right.
Once their deal comes through, they've got all this money to spend. It's all set up for them. They've got money coming off the payroll. There's money coming in throughout baseball. So theoretically, the Cardinals should be able to spend with these larger teams. The problem is the Red Sox, the Tigers, the guys with the rich owners, the Yankees, they also have all this, all this new money coming in. So what I find interesting is the Cardinals, it's shocking to me how much money the Cardinals offered Price. I can't believe it. Like, I just never thought the Cardinals would ever offer a starting pitcher that. And it's a stunning amount that showed how they have a lot of money and they were desperate for a starting pitcher. And it was still $30 million short.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's when I look at this. Look at the teams that have signed the big guys. The Tigers, who have the billionaire owner who's so desperate to win a World Series before he lives to be 150. I hate it when people say that. I hate him like, he has to get one before he dies. He's like, hey, he's walking around. He's fine.
I mean, that's really what people are saying, though. They keep bringing up what his age is, and they're like, oh, my God, time is ticking, so they got to get – I mean, it's kind of like – it makes me very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I know. I was like, hey, pal, you're kind of coughing a little bit, too. You're not looking so healthy yourself. But no, so yeah, but you, that is the idea, though. There's an urgency, we'll call it that. The Tigers will spend a lot of money. The Red Sox are spending a lot of money. And listen, when you look at the teams that are favored for a guy like Hayward, you're still talking about the Yankees. You're still talking about the Cubs. On a certain level, you know, we talk about more money being in baseball, but so far I've yet to see, other than that weird Marlins contract, and what the Marlins do is always out. It's kind of an aberration, weird thing anyway. When it comes down to these top-level bidders, this still seems to be going to the Dodgers and the Red Sox and the Giants and the Yankees.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Because they're still making, like, all the money that's being equally distributed among all of these teams. Those teams that you mentioned are still making as much as they always did, more than everyone else on their own. So when you talk about the TV and radio contracts and their own TV deals, I mean, everything, all the money that's coming in, but then what they're generating on their own is still going to be where they can overpay for something. I mean, look what's happening with the Reds. I mean, they have like these bad contracts, Joey Votto, Brandon Phillips. I mean, they have contracts that they're not going to be able to get out from under unless they get really creative, and it's going to hurt them for, a significant amount of time, because they're not going to be able to over. So that's, I don't think that's ever going to change, no matter what's coming in, because there's still, you know, owners that want to be making money, and there's still, you know, the Reds, they don't sell very well. They don't, you know, draw very well in April, May, and September. And so there's still a huge discrepancy. I just think the amount of dollars that are being spent, I think it's all relative. You know, what if David Price is getting $30 million and 15 years ago he would have gotten, you know, $18 million a year, and everyone would have drooled and screamed about how outrageous that is. And I think it's just all still on the same scale, the same relative scale. And in 20 more years, whatever guy signs for $1 billion, it's you know, it's not going to change.
Wow, yeah, that's that, and it's funny too. And this is why I find Hayward, who I feel like we should talk about next, because he is, you know, now that Price is signed, it's basically Greinke's next, and then really, like, you maybe you can say Cueto, but I feel like he's a clear step down. And you know,
for sure.
So you know, I mean, you've got Greinke and Price, and but really, great. I said Greinke's just going to be now in relation to Price. So is it a little bit more? Is it a little bit shorter? There's nothing going to be really revolutionary about that deal. We have a general idea of what this is going to be. To me, it's about Hayward now.
Yeah, you
know, Hayward is the top guy out there, and everybody wants him. like the thing about Jason Hayward is everybody will either has a space or will find a space for mm-hmm. a 26-year-old guy that plays incredible defense, is above average hitter, who still has the people will be talking about the potential for Jason Hayward's power till the end of time, until he actually is like 94, and they're like, okay, next year he's not going to hit 35 homers. We're going to let that go. But otherwise, you know, everybody wants him. Everyone will find a place for a guy like Jason Hayward. Sports Illustrated was saying he could be a $300 million player. That seems and they tried to even a lot for like maybe the overstating of defense as importance. But to me, a guy like that that's 26 years old, I mean,
yeah,
I think he may end up, the way this market is going, I kind of feel like he may end up being the highest paid player. He's going to get more than Kershaw. I get more than Price, so I think you can make an argument that Hayward, in the span of the next 2 weeks, whoever will pay it, Jason Hayward will be the most expensive player in baseball.
That could very well be. And if you think about it, like, when you talk about most free agents, you're paying for what they did in their prime. Right. Not what they're going to do for you, but what they did in their prime for another team. That's what you're paying for. Well, Jason Hayward is in his prime. And in his prime, you know, quote-unquote years are loosely, what, like 26 to 31? So if you're going to overpay for anybody, that I would think, and correct me if I'm wrong, you've seen him play much more than I have, but I mean, wouldn't you say that would be a wise investment over getting the 33-year-old who, you know, completely mashed and is now going to start on his decline while you pay him $25 million a year?
Yeah, I mean, that's because Hayward's awesome. But of course, the thing about Hayward is awesome. But he's not like, you know, the way that he's awesome is different than the way we usually pay these guys. Usually we pay Giancarlo Stanton, you know, because like this guy's theoretically healthy, Giancarlo Stanton, which is something that Jason Hayward is and Giancarlo Stanton isn't, actually, which is also worth keeping in mind. But, you know, he had that year that he hit 20, however many homers, almost 30 homers. And so people still try to believe that he's going to do that. But having watched him all last year, watched him in Atlanta, I just don't think that's ever going to happen. I think if that's going to happen, that's going to happen like 10 years from now when he can't run anymore and he's just selling out for power. And So, and to me, that's the fear of a Hayward trade is so of a Hayward deal is so much of his value is wrapped up in being fast and wrapped up in right. being young and wrapped up in being this incredible base runner and this incredible defensive player, which is great and all, but he's not going to be that guy at 33.
No.
Or at 34, and you're going to have to sign him for that long a time. So, and I think that's what, whereas Giancarlo Stanton is theoretically should still be able to hit 30 homers when he's 34.
And he's only 25 years old now, right? Yeah, or 26?
Yeah. Hayward's 26. And so oh. if you sign him to a 10-year deal, he will be it's funny because I'm sure he'll get one of those opt-outs like Price has. But,
right.
You know, if you sign him for a 10-year deal, if you're paying him $30 million or whatever at the end of that yeah. deal in 9 years, he's going to be 35, which all of a sudden it's not so cute anymore. Like it's not yeah. so cute to be like, oh, wow, this guy's so young. Well, not anymore. And you signed this thing. Like the thing about being young is it's you're not actually that forever. And you're signing him for basically like think of it this way. If he's 29, he gets a lot less money. And a lot less years. So really you're paying for the next 2 or 3 years, hoping he has this breakthrough. But you don't actually know that's going to happen. So I don't know. To me, I feel like the Cardinals have to sign him because they're a worse team than they were. Like if they don't sign Hayward, they have a worse pitching staff, worse defense, and worse lineup than they did last year. And the Cubs are probably better than they are right now anyway. So that's the scary part. But do you think would you make Jason Hayward? In this market, if you had the need for him, would you make him the highest paid player in baseball?
No, I wouldn't. Yeah. I wouldn't. But it's not, it's just a matter of like what free agent class you end up coming up with, like everybody else, right? I mean, it's what year you end up being a free agent more than where you compare to the other great players in the game. So I wouldn't make him the highest paid player. Of course, and you know, speaking hypothetically, not owning a team, but like think about Albert Pujols. I mean, if you had said that Albert Pujols would be what he is right now, if you had told me that like 10 years ago, it would be hard to imagine.
Right.
You know, it'd be really hard to imagine that Albert Pujols would not be anything but the scariest hitter possibly in the history of the game, which is how I felt watching him all of those years.
Oh, and the Angels acted like he was going to be that 3 years ago.
I mean, he's signed with them till he's like, what, 42?
42, yeah, and he looks like this now.
I mean, that's insane.
I mean, he looks 45 now.
Because he probably is 45,
oh, no,
Will.
Now. But certainly, you're right, though. I'm going to let that one go. But I will say that, that I do think that, I think you're right. But of course, you know, a different kind of player. Like he's a different kind of player. He's not set yes. up in power. But to me, that's actually a reason to be more scared of Hayward because Hayward is eventually going to get older and he's not going to have the power. Like even Pujols, who can barely walk at times this year, could still hit homers.
Sure.
And Hayward's not going to be able to do that at 34.
You have to think about what teams are thinking right now. I mean, and it's really, to me, it's like if you want to sign him, you have to be able to money-wise support the rest of your payroll. So you can't just like sign a guy and then be like, oh my God, we have to get rid of all these other guys 2 years from now because we can't support this payroll or supposedly can't support the payroll. So, you know, when these big money teams spend this kind of money and if it doesn't work out, it doesn't hurt them. It really doesn't set them back at all. It's all it takes is two teams that are, you know, feeling like they want to be doing that. And then you get the owners involved. And that's where I really believe that these dollar figures get so out of control and bloated because the owners get involved, the agents get to them, and they should not be involved in that at all, for the most part, most of them. And then things go totally Looney Tunes, and I think that's what happens, and we'll probably see it again. I think the Greinke thing is, like, way more fascinating because he's so open about, like, he doesn't say anything politically correctly. It's great, and he's just, like, basically waiting to see what Price is going to get and waiting to see who's going to give him like a dollar more. And he's like, we might know who he signs with Friday night. I think I read that he might have a decision made. And for whatever, like you said, it's kind of curious that it's just all of a sudden the Dodgers and the Giants. And you have to wonder if he's just like, you know, salivating over that, because there's just, if there's one team that would absolutely kill the Dodgers that he left for, it'd be the Giants. And so, you know, you have to wonder how this whole thing came about, but I think it'd be hilarious if the Giants signed him. Oh my God. I mean, I can't even imagine what's going to happen, but yeah, I mean, I think he's going to sign too before the winter meetings, which is good. I guess it kind of will make the winter meetings a little bit boring, but, But he was waiting to see what the market was, and he knows that he's the king of the market. So we'll wait and see.
Yeah, it seems weird that the Dodgers, I know they've got the new ownership and they've got the new management and they've got the new crew in there. But I
Yeah.
mean, they still have like the highest payroll in baseball history, and we're still talking about one of the best two or three pitchers in baseball who was already there. It seems weird that they would not make the biggest deal. I know the Giants want him desperately, but it's hard to like it just feels like the Dodgers should be able to support that. Like it feels like that's what they should do, you know? Like there's like the Dodgers, that the point of being the Dodgers is that you can outbid everybody for Zach Greinke.
And they're going to have to. I mean, it's like Greinke has absolutely, in my opinion, and let me say I've not actually discussed this with him because I've never talked to him except one spring training interview. He does not care. Like he has no like loyalty feelings. It's just this is literally like if you offer me 217,375,446, and the next team order, it does 447. I'm going there. I mean, that's basically how he has put it.
Well, and that's
And
kind of
so.
what Price did. Isn't that what Price
Yes.
did? Yeah.
Pretty much. Yes.
He just wasn't as honest about it as
Yeah, he
Greinke
just doesn't like
was.
tell everybody that. And
Yeah.
so that's why I just think Greg, I just think it's just going to be hilarious because it's not like he's going, "Oh, I really want to stay in LA." And he might, to the world, he might be saying that to himself. I don't know, but I'm sensing that he has no feelings about that at all, and he's just like just waiting to see who's gonna, I maybe he's like set a deadline for Friday, like on Friday, get the highest number, and then we're gonna go with that one. And so I don't know. I just feel I agree with you that the Dodgers should absolutely just be able to, put an extra whatever on top of it. But I just feel like the Giants are gonna get him. I don't know why. It's I just because I guess we need a soap opera, and that would be one.
Listen, there are worse. You gotta be happy for Zach Greinke because there are worse places to be than to have your choice of being making $37 million a year
Ugh.
to play in either San Francisco or Los Angeles.
Tell me about it.
That
Tell
sounds
me about it.
very pleasant. So okay, I have a question for you about Houston. They made a move that I thought was weird. Yesterday was the day where everybody had to either offer arbitration or let guys go. A couple guys, Pedro Alvarez, I think, was the most surprising one to a lot of people. He led the league in homers a couple of years ago, and the
Yeah.
Pirates kind of let him go. But also Chris Carter. Like, I know Chris Carter bats 199, and I know that he strikes out a ton. But, I mean, 2 years ago, he hit, like, what, 37 homers? Like, I keep hearing about how Chris Davis is expected to get. You know, Chris Davis is expected to get this 5-year, 6-year massive contract, and he, I mean he's a little bit he's more consistent than Chris Carter, but Chris Carter's got 35 homer power. I was surprised that they let him go like that. But you've watched him on a more regular basis than me. Was he just not a fit there anymore, or what was the deal with that?
I mean, I think that what you're looking at is, can you pay a guy like $5.5 million in arbitration that has four horrendously bad months? I mean, when he's bad, it's terrible. And when, he came on at the end. I mean, certainly, like, I mean, he had a phenomenal September. He's one of the reasons why they ended up winning that wild card spot. But I get that, okay, batting average doesn't matter. It's on base percentage, whatever they're looking at. 199 is 199, and a low on base percentage, low slugging. I mean, you really can't put him in the middle of the order.
He had a bad year. No question he had a bad year. No
Yeah,
question.
well, he had a bad year, and he had a bad year the year before, even though he hit 37 home runs. I mean,
Yeah.
I get that part. But when you hit 37 home runs and you hit 203 and you're making, whatever he was making, the little bit over the league minimum, yeah, that's fine. Then you try to get him through and you try to get him to be more consistent, whatever. But when you're talking about money, a payroll that, they'd like to increase, but they don't have like they're not going to go crazy yet on payroll. And they have other options that are coming up. I mean, they have some prospects that are coming up that can play first base. They have some options. Luis Valbuena can play over there. I mean, they had They just, I think that it just would have been a really, really tough pill for them to swallow to pay him what he was going to make in arbitration to get what they were getting. Because, I mean, he's really just a lovely person, too. And I don't want to bash him, but when he strikes out, it's just, I mean, he looks like he is absolutely, it doesn't even look like he's coming close to the ball on these strikeouts. And, John Maley, the hitting coach, 2 seasons ago, who ended up with the, I feel like that. Kind of hurt him. It kind of hurt Carter when Maley left. But, you know, Carter, I think that Carter will see him kind of jump from team to team. He'll always get, you know, a modest 1-year deal, or, you know, in a few years he'll get some invites to spring training. But I don't think that we're ever going to see him emerge as what you really need to have if you're going to have a guy in the middle of the order. And when you have a power guy, I mean, where else are you going to put him? I don't know.
Yeah, I understand. If I'm a team that's looking for right-handed power that I don't have to put in the lineup every day, man, I'd grab him in a second. But
I'd grab him too, but not for $5.5 million.
Yeah,
fair. I would absolutely, like, if that's where, you know, and the next team will probably end up possibly getting him. I mean, I don't know what, you know, the going rate is going to be for him, but that's the problem when you are the team that was employing him and now you don't get to just pick the number that you pay him. And I think that he can be hugely valuable for somebody, certainly as a DH, but or a guy off the bench or whatever. But, and I hope that he's, you know, that he stays in baseball for a while, because you know, he's good for the game. He's a good teammate, and he can be a very good player. But I think they reached the end of the road with him.
All right. Well, all right. So when do you go? When are you off to winter meetings? We're recording this Thursday afternoon. When do you leave?
Sunday night. Yeah, they'll start in earnest on Monday. Rule 5 draft is on Thursday, and what you see the second that Rule 5 draft is over is a mass exodus from the hotel. It's hundreds and hundreds of baseball people making a beeline for the airport, so it's pretty entertaining. So, yeah, it'll be a nice little fun 3 days in Nashville, Tennessee.
All right, well, Nashville is an awesome place. It's an awesome place, and as David Price will tell you, it's just like St. Louis.
It's not. Okay.
I actually love St. Louis, but St. Louis is not Nashville. That's what he's trying.
Nashville's great.
Nashville's is awesome. I say that as out of praise for Nashville, not out of ripping on St. Louis. Nashville is a wonderful, wonderful city. So, and I actually always dreamed that if they ever didn't get the Tampa Bay thing figured out or the Oakland figured out, I always thought Nashville would be a wonderful place to have a baseball team.
You think they could support a baseball team?
Not any worse than Oakland or Tampa does.
Okay, well, that would, they're unacceptably not doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Exactly.
Right. Wow. So you think they, I mean, you can't, I mean, I always wonder, like, some of these, because I always, people bring up cities to me all the time.
Portland, like, Nashville, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, so 81 games a year, 40,000 seat stadium. Yeah. I mean, it's different from basketball, which is half those numbers I just said. So I mean, my feeling is no, none of these cities can support major.
Yeah, well, I think when they do studies, they always say that you should put another team in New York.
Right.
Like, I think that's I think that's pretty much what they say. I suspect the Mets and Yankees would have something to say about that.
Probably, yeah. You could put another team in LA. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, that's but how about we put another team that says they're in Los Angeles but are not, in fact, in Los Angeles? I think that would be fun. Just put a team in, like, somewhere in Wyoming, and they'll be like, well, we're the Los Angeles Broncos of Laramie. Anyway, Laramie's in Wyoming, right? I think so. Anyway,
that was pretty good. I was pretty impressive that you just pulled that out of nowhere.
Sure it is. I'm pretty sure it is. I think I saw it in Western once. All right, Allison, it was good to talk to you. Let's do this again. We'll do this. We'll try to do this after Hayward signs. We'll get together and chat, and definitely do it before the end of the year. And of course, and then next thing you know, it'll be 2016, and then all of a sudden we'll be doing this all the time again. So I hope.
We should do one post winter meetings when I have, like, way more to say than I had today. I have a lot to say today.
I would love to.
I'm going to have, like, a ton to say.
That's a good idea. Let's do one when you come back. So have a good time out there.
Thank you.
Enjoy yourself out there, and say hi to Ken Rosenthal for me.
I will. I'll throw our collective arms around him.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Thanks, Allison. As always, follow Allison on Twitter at @AllysonFootter. We'll be back probably with one next week. If not, we'll have one with Allison after she gets back from the winter meetings, and then my podcast with Tommy Craggs. Have an excellent week, everyone. Glad to be back talking to Allison. I really did miss you, Allison. It's glad to talk to you.
I missed you too, Will.
All right. Yay. All right. Be safe, everyone. We'll talk soon.